Dr. Yvonne Thornton is a specialist in obstetrics, gynecology, and maternal fetal medicine, and the first African-American woman in the U.S. to be board certified in high-risk obstetrics. Dr. Thornton was on our show in January to discuss her memoir, Something to Prove, in which she tells the story of how she overcame discrimination and the rigorous hours of medical training while raising two children to become a doctor, and we thought we would play that conversation for you today. I began by noting that this book was a sequel to her memoir, Ditch Digger's Daughters, which became a national bestseller, and I asked Dr. Thornton, why did your dad always want his daughters to be doctors?
Well, my dad was the generation of the Great Depression. And when you're very poor, the only thing that you can think of as success is physicians. And many of our brethren from abroad, they want their kids to be doctors, too. Mm-hmm. You know, the Italians, my son, the doctor, my daughter, the doctor, they felt that medicine. And my dad would say, if you can heal somebody, if you can make somebody well, it doesn't make any difference what color or gender you are. But I want my daughters to be doctors.
Well, your father obviously was a man who was, although he was a ditch digger for part of the time, yes. He was a man of great intelligence. And you quote him all throughout the book.
Yes.
So do you still hear his voice in the back of your head?
All the time, every day. There's not a day that goes by that some of his wise words or sayings or thought processes go through my mind when I try to analyze a certain situation.
Did he prepare you for racism and sexism, especially?
Well, he had to, because even he raised six girls. He had five biological daughters, and our foster sister Betty. So he raised six girls. And you say racism and sexism. In Long Branch, I didn't know about racism and sexism. We had a great time growing up in Long Branch, and only when I looked at the television down in Alabama, and that I saw that there was something with regard to racism, sexism. Believe it or not, is ongoing. And I've had more problems being a woman than I've ever had being a woman of color, being a black person.
Are all of your sisters, one of them has died, right?
Yes, Donna passed away, yes.
All the others doctors?
Yes, they are.
So your father got what he wanted.
He did. He absolutely did.
He also worked overtime so that all of you could learn how to play music. Can you tell us about the Thornton Sisters band?
Well, the Thornton Sisters, I think, basically was just one of his ingenious ideas of keeping us together. It started with my sister Donna, one who passed away, you remember Cracker Jacks, little prizes in a box mm-hmm. of Cracker Jacks? She found a little red saxophone in a box of Cracker Jacks. She said, Daddy, what's this? Can I have a real one? And he goes like, well, I don't have the money to get a real one. So he asked one of his military fellows to see if he had a saxophone, and he did. And to her credit, my sister played with that saxophone without lessons. She just slept with it, ate with it, went to school with it. And all of a sudden, my father and mother said, well, she needs some lessons because it's really tearing up the household. So the fact of the matter was we went to our middle school music teacher. And he said, sure, I will teach them. So my sister went, my other sister went, and all of a sudden music started to come into our household. If she can play saxophone, I can play something else. And we started the Thornettes.
And what did you play?
I play alto saxophone. I played alto saxophone. I still play alto saxophone and soprano.
And did you travel and earn money?
Yes, we did. And that the Thornton Sisters band became, we went on Ted Mack and the Original Amateur Hour in those days. And from that time on, the Apollo, we won six consecutive weeks at the amateur week on Wednesday nights at the Apollo. We're always looking for that hook that would drag mm-hmm. people off the stage. And from that time on, but it was always back to the books.
So you didn't ever consider staying in show business?
Well,
it just a means to an end?
My father, it was a means to an end for my dad. But for us, we wanted to be in show, but Daddy wanted to be mobbed. We want to have our autographs. And we played at the Brooklyn Fox with Murray the K in a swinging soiree. He said, forget about this doctor dream. We're the Thornton Sisters. He said, no, girls. You know, when you're 15, 16, got great figures, looking good, people will look at. But just think 15, 20, 30 years, when you're 50, 60 years of age, trying to blow a saxophone. A 50-year-old woman, all gray, arthritic hands. It's not a pretty sight to see. And nobody's going to pay any money to see an old, withered-up woman trying to blow a saxophone. But if you have them scripper scraps hanging around your neck and they call you Dr. Thornton with the skill, yep, they'll be coming to see you.
Your father's only partly right there. I mean, you probably, if you were really good, you probably could have had very nice career in music. But how did you wind up going to medical school?
Well, that was the mantra, to be a physician. And I take exception with that because the older musicians now are all men. You know, you see the Stones, they're all men. You don't see too many older women out there in the limelight. But medical school was my first two sisters did make it. Let's put it this way. The first pass, they said they were going to Monmouth College, pre-med, and it was too hard. And they hit organic chemistry, and that was the end of that. And what I did was it kind of really hit my dad very hard. And he had told the whole neighborhood all of his daughters were going to be doctors. And they weren't. So he was like in a catatonic state. I love biology. I've wanted to be an obstetrician since I was 8 years of age. And I think that confluence of what my father wanted and what I wanted said, okay, let me just try this pre-med thing. And I went from Monmouth College to Columbia College of Physicians and Surgeons.
You also served 3 years at the National Naval Medical Center in Bethesda.
I did.
Was that the best place to get training in maternal fetal medicine?
We were already trained. We volunteered. For the military as lieutenant commander.
Well, there weren't that many women in the Navy in those days.
That's correct. And there weren't any women at Bethesda as attendings. My husband said it was the right thing to do to give back to the country. We had no military loans. We had both of our finished our training. He was in orthopedics, mine in maternal fetal medicine. And there were only 14 women in the country in 1979 that were maternal fetal medicine experts.
When in the early days of becoming a doctor, you work incredible hours. Were you already married to somebody who is also becoming a doctor?
Yes.
How did you work that out?
Well, he was at St. Luke's. I was at Roosevelt. We did not have a family. We were on call every other night, every other night. And that's probably why we didn't have a family. It was great contraception.
You were never together.
Never together. But when I became a fellow, I finished that on-call every other night schedule. And that's when I became pregnant with my firstborn, my first son, in 1978. And now he's 32 years of age. And I told him, as I told my daughter, I said, look, your grandfather was a ditch digger. Your dad and I are physicians. We are financially stable. However, we're doing this so you can grow up and be anything you want to be. Orthopedic surgeon, cardiologist, radiologist, as long as there's an MD behind that name.
Really? You just wouldn't want him to move on a little higher and become president of the United States?
No, just an MD behind that name.
After the Navy, you were hired as an assistant professor at New York Hospital Cornell Medical Center. What happened when you showed up for your first day on the job?
Well, that I'm laughing now because I was hired sight unseen based upon my curriculum vitae and resume. And also talking to my mentor, who was at Columbia, and the object and subject of race probably never came up during that conversation because I am a PNS graduate, Columbia Physicians and Surgeons graduate. However, when I did show up the first day, they were shocked that I was a woman of color. I mean, really, really shocked. There were no black people at Cornell in 1979.
This is pretty late in the game.
Yeah, that, late in the game, right.
Well, one of the people in the department was an Afrikaner, wasn't he? I mean,
yes.
I don't know whether that mattered.
I don't know. I didn't know that. My fellow maternal fetal medicine specialist was from South Africa, and this was in 1982. In 1982, they had no full-time people of color on staff in the Department of OBGYN, and they just didn't have any black people.
My guest is Yvonne S. Thornton, whose follow-up to her bestseller, The Ditch Digger's Daughters, is Something to Prove, A Daughter's Journey to Fulfill a Father's Legacy, a memoir. It is published by Kaplan. Were you already a board-certified physician at that time?
Yes, I was.
So what kind of job did they give you, a board-certified physician?
Well, not the job that I was trained for. They sent me down to the sub-basement to be director of the clinic. That was my job.
Was that something that was you were overqualified for?
Yes.
And it was, and you must have assumed that you were being treated unfairly then?
Yes, you can assume all you want, but you're in the sub-basement in the clinic. And
well, you could have quit, but you decided to.
No, I called my dad. He was alive then. And I said, Daddy, you know, I am a double board certified maternal fetal medicine. I am an Ivy League trained physician, and here I am in the sub-basement in the clinic. And he said, well, there's patients down there, right? Cookie, which is my family nickname. I said, yes, Daddy. He says, you're not there to be popular. You're there to see patients. So see the patients. Take care of the patients. And that's what I did.
Now, I've never understood what board certified or double board certified actually means.
Board certification is...
I never wanted a doctor to be bored.
Well, most of them are not bored, but this is the B-O-A-R-D type. And board certification is a voluntary process. For 13 years, I've been a board examiner. Now, board certification has always been a voluntary process. It's never been mandated by the state. You need to have a mandated state license. But beyond that, you don't need to be board certified. And what is board certification? It is the minimal training by which you're considered to be a consultant and expert. And you've taken examinations and you sat before this august body of examiners and you've told them that about training, about how you manage patients, and therefore you become board certified.
How long did you stay in the sub-basement at New York Hospital Cornell Medical Center?
A decade, 10 years.
And then you decided to open up your own practice?
No, I didn't. I've never been in private practice. I've been in faculty practice. I was asked to go to Morristown Memorial Hospital to develop their perinatal center in Morristown, New Jersey.
Well, there was that incident with Steve Klein.
Steve Klein, yes. That wasn't a private practice. It was basically still a maternal fetal medicine private venture that we were supposed to have a joint venture in order to be a referral center for obstetricians to test for their patients with high-risk fetuses, to do ultrasound, and to do maternal fetal medicine consults.
Sounds like something good and important.
Yes.
Why didn't it work out?
Because I was naive. I did not have any business savvy, let's put it that way. And I just gave it all, and they had another agenda, let's put it that way.
Ran away with the money.
They did. They backed up the truck and cleaned out the center and ran away with my money, and I've never seen that again. But
You haven't tried to find him?
Well, believe it or not, he's the very small and maternal fetal medicine a field. And you see him quoted, you see in private practice. But, you know, I've never sought him out. There was no reason to do that.
And then you face some other problems that, you were sued for malpractice.
Oh, yes. Yes.
You write about that in the book
as well.
Obviously, you didn't do it. You're not responsible for it, but it was your office.
It was my patient. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're the surgeon of record, it is your patient, period. Even though I was on faculty at Cornell and also the department and the hospital was sued, I was an employee of Cornell. So we were all sued. However, when you talk about suits, you're talking about culpability and who was the actual person who performed malpractice. And for the life of me, I just said, I did everything right. I don't understand. I don't understand how this could have happened, this untoward outcome. And eventually, 12 years later, I did find out the answer to the mystery.
A nurse had
failed to prep the patient properly.
But did that hurt you?
Very much so.
You stayed at Cornell after being denied funding for new equipment and being passed over for several promotions mm-hmm. in favor of less qualified male candidates.
True. But I stayed. Because I wasn't when I wanted to leave, I wanted to leave on my own terms, in the sense that these things, being a woman of color, happen all the time, but you know they're going to happen.
But a lot of women tell me that they would prefer to go to a female gynecologist. Wouldn't it have made sense to have a woman in charge of the obstetrics and gynecology department?
It would have, but unfortunately, we're talking about the 80s, 1982 to 1992. And even though 34% of the incoming, 34 to 43% of incoming OBGYNs are females, there is a hierarchy with regard to academic medicine in which the majority of chairmen of the department are all males. And the hierarchy of professors are all males. In 10 or 20 years, the females that are coming in now in the lower echelons will arrive at that high academic position, but not now.
I've also been told that in some cases the women who really do rise up are the ones who are the most who emulate the male doctors the most. They don't bring the sorts of things that women might want from.
That's correct. That is correct. And some of the stories that I'm being told of patients having gone to female obstetricians, I might as well go into a male. I feel betrayed. I feel that they're very cold.
So you left eventually, went to Morristown Memorial mm-hmm. Hospital in New Jersey, and now you're at Westchester Medical Center in New York. Did you continue to have to deal with the glass ceiling?
Up until right now, when I dictate my terms, I'm a preceptor at Westchester. But just before that, I still was on faculty at St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital, and I've always been in academics. And there was always a male who was the chairman, and he had another agenda. And they look at you as that, okay, fine, you're going to be our faculty, but I'm going to look at you differently and treat you differently.
But didn't writing a bestseller change things a little bit for you?
No. No. You would think so, but not really, no.
Well, you have another book, this one called Something to Prove, A Daughter's Journey to Fulfill a Father's Legacy. It is written with the help of Anita Bartholomew.
Yes.
It is published by Kaplan. And I want to thank you so much, Yvonne S. Thornton, for being on our show today.
Thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, I'm told that we have a little more time. So,
okay.
So you're in Westchester. Are you working on another book?
Well, it took 15 years between those two books, and I only wanted to be a one book author, actually, like Margaret Mitchell or Harper Lee. One book, that was it. Until I had my children, and many people said, "Well, how do you raise your kids? How do you do that? How do you balance being, you know, a professor in OBGYN, being a surgeon, being a researcher, and then coming home, being married, raising kids? You need to write another book, Dr. Thornton. You need to write another book to let us know how you as a parent can handle this." And so I did.
And I want to thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you so much.
We really have run out of time
yes.
this time.